Hi, I'm Chris Cotnor, executive producer of the DSR Network. We've been incredibly busy here over the past month. With the launch of TNR's Daily Blast, we now produce 10 shows covering foreign policy, national security, domestic politics, cyber and tech, legal, and much more. We've also just launched our redesigned website at thedsrnetwork.com. With all this content, there has never been a better time to become a member. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack community. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the podcast, a pre-State of the Union edition, but we'll try to make it so that if you're listening to it after the State of the Union, it's still interesting. I am joined today by a special guest, one of our friends and someone we admire greatly, Jen Rubin of the Washington Post, also of the Green Room podcast. How are you doing today, Jen?
Just fine. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's State of the Union Day in Washington. It's incredibly exciting. I'm sure you're tingling with excitement. This week, we actually have three events that are real hype fests. We know we had Super Tuesday, we have State of the Union, and then we have the Oscars. And I want to start out by asking you, which do you think is going to be most disappointing?
Gosh. I'm an Oscar fan.
But aren't you disappointed every year? Like, I get there, I'm like, the popcorn I'm going to watch. I get the red carpet's pretty good, I'm kind of into that. And then the show.
Oof. Yeah, I know. It just drags and drags. I actually wrote about this. I love movies, and there are things I love about it, so you keep coming back. The show itself is usually terrible, but there are a few moments that I love. And what I love most of all is when often the international film winner or an immigrant who wins one of the other awards gets up there and says something about coming to the United States or being able to show their film because they couldn't show it elsewhere or they couldn't do what they do elsewhere. And this year, there is a film, a nominee for a documentary about Ukraine. So I'm kind of waiting for that emotional moment.
And that one's going to win, right? I mean, we can stick our neck out and just say, that's about Mariupol, right?
Yes, exactly.
And it's a very moving film. But, well, speaking of that and showing that I'm like, after like 10 years of podcasting, I've gotten into the smooth segue. Have you seen the Joe Biden ad with the ex-presidents from movies? And what did you think of that?
I thought this is a good sign for Joe Biden. People have a sense of humor over there, and they're trying to make something that will actually capture a few eyeballs. So I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. My only criticism is that the actors themselves looked old. So it was a little bit of like old geezers getting together sharing war stories. But aside from that, I liked it.
I liked it too. I was wondering where Martin Sheen was. But other than that, I thought it was pretty good. And I thought, this is how this campaign's going to be won. It's not going to be ads because people don't watch TV.
Right.
They don't watch linear TV anymore. And it's not going to be speeches because neither one of these guys is going to go out and give a lot of speeches. It's going to be clips that somehow go viral for some reason that are really going to control this. And for Biden, that's a great opportunity because he's great with people. He's got a sense of humor. People can, you know, some guy can follow him around with his phone up and all the time, and then they can get things and pump them out there and change the nature of campaigning, I think.
And they have started doing that. They're on TikTok now, and they've done a couple of these things. They did one right around the Super Bowl. So I think they get it. You know, I was up at the White House today, and I think there's one thing people don't understand, or people kind of in the know don't understand, and that is the Biden team has something that the Trump team doesn't, aside from patriotism and brains, and that is self-awareness.
Yeah.
They understand the challenge. They understand what his weak points are. They understand the need to, that people have forgotten how the Trump years were. They understand that they need to engage with young people and particularly Black men. So I think they are more aware than sometimes, you know, we in the press give them credit for. How effectively they'll deal with it is something entirely different. But I do think that they understand the challenge.
Did you go to that Ben LeBolt, Karine LePierre State of the Union setup meeting that they did over there? Was that where you were there, or were you there for a different reason?
It was off the record, so I will not say.
Okay. I was going to go to that thing. That particular thing this morning, and I live in Northwest Washington, D.C., which, as you may know, is the third world. And there was a water main break on our street, and we had no water.
Oh, my goodness.
And I felt...
We had one of those not too long ago. I also live in Northwest.
It's so ridiculous. But I was like, no, I can't. I have to bathe. I have to bathe before I go to the White House. And so that's what kept me from...
Yes. I had a little third world experience a few weeks back. I don't know if you were in the area as well, but there was a water main break and we had to be boiling our water for a couple of days. And I thought, oh, what an inconvenience, grouse, grouse, grouse. And then I thought, imagine like those poor people in Flint or people in other countries who you realize like not having clean water, like really is... absolutely paralyzing. And it was like a little bit of an eye opener. And it was like such a micro minute. It was like 24 hours and it was done. But it gave you just a little sense that not everyone is as fortunate.
No. I was ready to complain. And then I thought they're drinking seawater in Gaza. And then I thought they're like 19 million people threatened with starvation in Sudan. And yes. So what I thought I would do instead is not go to the meeting. You know, it put it in some perspective.
Yes. Yes. Perspective we need.
Yeah. No doubt about that. So let's think a little bit about the president's speech today. Because, you know, particularly when you're in the press, you know, they send you like, here are the points he's going to make. And it's growing the economy from the middle out and the bottom up and not from the top down. Which by the way is, I know they love that expression. What does that mean to people? I mean,
I have made the same point. They have an issue. It's worked for Democrats since FDR. They're for the hardworking Americans. Republicans are for the rich cats. That's it.
That's pretty simple. That's like, you know, say that. You
yes.
know, I have some people and they go, no, I thought of that. And I'm like, yeah. I love it. I love what you're about here. It's a great yes. sentiment, but it doesn't actually mean anything. But then they're going to go through a whole bunch of stuff, and it's going to be like, I did all this stuff. And then there's going to be like Ukraine stuff and Gaza stuff and a couple shots at Trump. And, you know, people then write the entire speech on how vigorous Biden was and the word he slipped up on. I mean, it's bizarre because we know that now. What are you looking for to sort of cut through, you know, the canned nonsense?
I've decided that the most important things that happen at State of the Union since they've become these long laundry lists is there something visual to see? Is there a confrontation? And you remember the most memorable things in the recent State of the Unions have been "You lie" from that crackpot from Florida, or Alito shaking his head, not true, or Marjorie Taylor Greene getting into it with the president. I think Biden wants confrontation. I think he deals with it really well. And if he does that and can spark a viral moment or two there, I think that's a lot better for him than having some canned lines, which maybe some of the people cover and some don't. That's the nature of our politics today. And, you know, you have to feed the beast. I wish it weren't so. I wish visuals were not as important as they are, but they really are. And so I think Biden is not going to get any younger, but he can show combativeness. And I think combativeness will reassure the base a bit and will show that he's up for this, which I do think he is.
I have to say, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, every time Biden says, "I kicked Trump's ass," it resonates. And yeah. he says that stuff, you know, all the time. And that's kind of the way he is. And last year, I mean, the high point of Joe Biden's rhetorical career, which has not exactly been, you know, the greatest in the history of rhetoric, was when, you know, that he turned it all around on, what was it, Social Security or something.
Yeah.
And essentially said, okay, so you guys like that? Well, then don't cancel it. And right. It was like, holy mackerel.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's so many things he can do. He can do it on the border. He can do it on Putin. Don't be a bunch of poodles for Putin or whatever he wants to say. You know, he can really kind of goad them. Now, whether that's his intention going in, I don't think they would admit. But I don't think they're going to be disappointed if they see a feisty, combative Biden. You know, the best Biden ever was? Do you remember that vice presidential debate in 2012 against Paul Ryan? He destroyed Paul Ryan. That's back when I was a Republican. That was so long ago. And he was feisty. He was on his game. He was pugilistic. That's the Biden that we need. And if that Biden shows up, I think, first of all, it'll reassure a lot of people. And secondly, I think it'll really kind of pep up the campaign.
Oh, for sure, because Biden challenged Trump to debates, and Trump was going to avoid debates, and now Trump said, "Oh yeah, I'll debate him anywhere." He won't. He won't, because he doesn't want to get into that, because Biden actually knows his stuff, and you know, you don't have to go to where Joe Scarborough went yesterday and say Biden is smarter and sharper than he's ever been in his life to know that he is a lot smarter and sharper than Donald Trump. You know,
also, when you're facing 91 counts, your lawyers, you know, plead with you not to go on. He has disregarded their advice. But as you know, him going on has enriched Eugene Carroll, because he can't stop himself. He can't stop defaming people. He can't stop incriminating himself, because this goes back to the issue. He has no self-awareness. He doesn't know what's bad for him. He doesn't know what's good for him. He doesn't know what is going to make things better or worse. He is just reflexive and without any kind of editing, without any kind of self-control.
You know, what I've always wanted to do, and I just, the technology has not presented itself, but maybe it will before I'm gone. Do you remember pop-up video on you know, like MTV? And they would do a song and they would pop up and they would say, well, this guy actually went here and this guy ate at this and this guy likes sardines or whatever it would say in the thing. And I've always thought that, you know, these debates or State of the Unions would be really good if you could have a few people throwing in these kind of pop-up commentaries. I mean, pop-up, it could be the Talmud. It's the same thing. You know, there's this kind of, you know, in real time, calling these people out. It would be very entertaining and useful.
Absolutely. You know, there are sports events that are covered that way now. Instead of the usual announcers with all their pontificating, it's just two guys in the studio, you know, like they're talking in their living room. It's much more entertaining than this kind of stuffy, you know, presentation. So, yeah, absolutely. I also think they have hidden Biden from the press a lot because of the gaffes and because he kind of goes on and on. But I don't think they can do that anymore. And I think he's fine. And as you know, the more you put him out there, the less critical every single one and every single word is, because he'll be back the next day. So I think, you know, there is something to let Joe be Joe.
Yeah, no, definitely. Also, Mystery Science Theater 2000. But I didn't want to forget that as yet another example. The other weird thing, though, and it builds on what you were saying about the State of the Union. You know, I went to the State of the Union for the first time when I was like 21 years old, and I was a press secretary for a congressman who nobody remembers, named Steve Solars. And I went up to, and he said, it was like I just joined. So he said, want to go to the State of the Union? And I thought, oh, this is a great honor. It was actually because nobody else wanted to go. So I went up, and it was the driest, dullest affair I've ever been to. It was, I don't know who was president at the time. I'm a shudder to think, but maybe it was Jimmy Carter. And it was just unbelievably dull and gray and uninteresting. Now, I was listening to a report about this State of the Union. Well, the Democratic women are all going to wear white in solidarity with women's rights. There are a bunch of people who are going to wear yellow and blue in solidarity with Ukraine. Everybody is bringing a special guest that they're going to point out and say, Mike Johnson is bringing the family of, Evan Gershwin, the Wall Street Journal reporter, so that he can show that he doesn't, you know, support Putin, even as he's supporting Putin every day, right? but it's like turned into this performative carnival.
Yes. Well, remember, it started with Ronald Reagan. He was the first one to have the guests in the box, and because he understood TV and he was a performer. Now everything is performative. But I do think I love the shot. And it's true when it's the State of the Union or any other shot, when you look down and you see Republicans on one side, Democrats on the other, and you can literally see the difference. The Republican side is a bunch of white, gray people in dark suits. On the Democratic side, it's all over the place. It's young people, it's old people, it's black people, it's Asian people, it really is. And it just always speaks volumes about where these parties are. Now, as you know, in the State of the Union, that gets a little jumbled because all the other guests say you don't see the stark divide. But still, I think it's so telling about which party has kind of given up representing everybody and which party thinks that the moral imperative of democracy is you have to represent everyone.
In fact, the Republican Party at this point, that's its main selling point, right? It's like, hey, we're just a bunch of, you know, wealthier white people. And if that's what you want America to look like, vote for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, you know, gross as it is. And so they've got, you know, Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama, a state, if I were a Republican, I don't know that I would be drawing attention to the stunning...
to the IVF thing? Oh my God, are they insane?
Yeah, because she's going to have to walk the fine line between 9 frozen cells are a baby, and we want to create more babies than the Democrats, which is their response, why they just passed this law in Alabama yesterday. It's and they're literally what they're saying is, no, we're the pro-baby party. We want more babies. It's really like through the looking glass, I think.
It is what the Nazis did. Remember, women were supposed to have a lot of babies so that the white race would prevail. It goes hand in hand with the replacement theory. They don't want to be outbred, as they would say. And that is all, you know, all kind of knotted up together. But I think it's amusing, frankly, that people have finally figured out, oh, gosh, the idea of declaring a, you know, 2 cells to be a person is a horrible idea. It's bizarre. Who thinks that that has rights? That's the whole premise for their abortion position, that embryo, that, you know, fertilized egg has more rights than the woman. That's the whole basis. It just dawned upon them that this was what it's all about. But it's perfect because these people cannot give up on that concept without essentially giving up on the whole forced birth, you know, you can never destroy one of these things, you know, ultimate rights, you know, for the fetus, none for the woman. So it's kind of, you know, I don't want to say amusing because it's horrifying, but what did we think they were doing? I mean, that's what this is about. It's extending personhood to a couple of cells and obtaining control over a woman's body to do it. It is insane.
No. The more cells a female human has in their body, the less rights they have.
Right. So
you start out, you got them all. You get past 16, it's downhill the whole way.
You know, what can I say?
Look, you've got also this guy, what is his name? Mark Robinson, the gubernatorial candidate in North Carolina, who is a racist, is a Holocaust denier, is as odious as they get. But yesterday we discovered he has gone on the record saying he wants to go back in time to the era before women were given the vote.
I give him credit for candor. That's what Clarence Thomas wants, because once you fix the meaning of the 14th Amendment back in 1867 or wherever it was, you are going back to the time before women had voting rights. So he's just more candid about it than Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. So kudos for being honest. But I do have to laugh. A lot of people, me included, jumped on the New York Times, which had a piece about him that went up yesterday, calling him a fiery outsider. I went ballistic. A lot of people went ballistic. They changed the headline with no explanation. So it's now something that's minorly okay. But it just shows you, like, are these people uneducated? Do they, like, not have Google on their little machines at the New York Times? What the hell is the matter with these people? And they have gotten used to so blending down the language, so making everything so bland and ordinary and normal, that they are covering a race that is not there. They're covering a party that is not there. It's just lying to people at this point. So it was a telling moment. My other favorite recently, by the way, I also got on them for this, was like Margaret Mead tramping out into the jungle. They went out to find people who really like Joe Biden. Because there are such people. They found a few of them. Wouldn't you know? People who look at his record and think he's great. And the sense of wonderment that they have. Do they not know millions upon millions of people voted for him? Do they not know that even in their skewed polls, 40-whatever percent amounts to tens of millions of people? But their mindset is so skewed by talking to one another and this kind of jaded insiderism and pseudo-sophistication that you get essentially garbage out of them. I don't know. I don't think the New York Times used to be this bad. I really don't. I mean, they had some substance to them. Yeah, they've always been, you know, we always know where they've been on Israel, but they had some common sense. This is just atrocious now.
Yeah, no, you are right. And we could spend many hours on the New York Times because they've declined in so many ways. Their op-ed page is just, I mean, I can barely go there. But it's really the editors who deserve the brunt of the shame on this stuff, because you can, sometimes the stories are fairly decent, but the headlines have gone through their New York Times patent pending normalizer bot AI that just says, we're going to make Trump sound like he's just another candidate.
That is such a great analogy. And, you know, in that piece with the fiery outsider, it was about, I don't know, 10, 12 paragraphs down before they said something like, he said controversial things about women, gays, and the Holocaust. What the hell does that mean? Would you know that he has said really the most astounding things? I mean, it really is. It is the normalcy bot. And that is what they do for the entire Republican Party.
Right. And when that lets these people sort of creep through, you know, the Republicans, they get him as a candidate. Now they've got a candidate who had to drop out of the race. Also, I think in North Carolina, because he cheated. He actually had mules pumping ballots into the campaign. Then there was the other guy who's Dinesh D'Souza's son-in-law. who promoted the movie about the fake mules. And then, of course, today, the story and your paper had this best, Ronnie Jackson, responsible for turning the White House into a version of the Woodstock Festival during, you know, where literally everybody was popping Xanax and drinking alcohol. Credit to Noah Shachtman at the Rolling Stone on getting that story. And that somehow Ronnie Jackson got demoted after the fact from being an admiral.
Oh, he didn't know about it. I mean, doesn't like the military have some obligation when people pass themselves off as a rank that they do not hold? Don't they like go after those people? He's been saying he's an admiral for forever. He's been a captain since, you know,
2 years ago. 2 years ago, he got demoted.
Yeah. So like they don't like say anything. They don't, you know, speak up. But no, this is like having Michael Jackson's doctor in the White House, which makes you understand how insane people were. They were literally on drugs. They were literally amped up, and then they had to be brought down to sleep. This is like the Judy Garland problem. I mean, you know, amp her up and then put her to sleep. Amp her up, put her to sleep. No wonder these people sounded like crackpots. Well, they were crackpots already, but can you imagine?
I cannot, you know, but wouldn't it be great if Joe Biden just came out there and in the midst of something, he says, oh, I see Captain Ronnie Jackson out there. Thank you for your service. It would bring down the house. All right. In the couple of minutes we have left, what are you hoping we will get out of this tonight?
I think there's really two things. One, I think he will help get over this amnesia. You know, Elise Stefanik, you know, perhaps the most infuriating person in Washington because she's smarter than this, you know, said, were you better off 4 years ago? Yes, we were locked down, but the shelves were bare. We were all scrambling around for masks. Inflation was at, you know, whatever, 6%. Unemployment was at 6%. The country was a basket case. People were dying by the thousands every day. And, you know, we all have, you know, apparently the memory of a flea. So I think it's really important for him to do the look where we have come from and really remind people and bang it home, because the Republicans will pretend that, you know, listen, Trump pretends that he passed all this great legislation, which either Biden did or Obama did. So I think it's the getting people to remember where we came from. And the other thing is explaining how crackpotish these people are. These people are on Putin's side when it comes to Ukraine. You can have whoever you want as a guest, but you're still on Putin's side. You can scream, I want the border. I won't vote for Ukraine aid. You get the stuff in the border. Then you say, you got to take it out. I won't vote for it. Then it comes over the House and they say, there's nothing in the border. I mean, this is like, you know, some kind of old Jewish joke, but the portions are so small. And, you know, I think illuminating the extremism, whether it's IVF, whether it is on the border, and really their entire attitude towards government, that they could tell you what to read, when to have sex, what kids to have, what you're going to read, what your kids are going to be taught. It is scary. It's absolutely terrifying. And I think if he does those two things, remind us of where we've been, and remind us of where we could be going if he doesn't win in 8 months. I think if he does that, that will be a good beginning to the campaign.
Yeah, you know, and I think, just picking up on your last point, it goes to the New York Times point as well. If there are going to be media outlets that sanitize the news or distort it in order to make it seem normal, then it is the job of politicians like Joe Biden and anybody who supports Joe Biden to call out the other side as simply and directly as possible every time it happens. That's a lie. Or we gave you a bipartisan border deal that the Republicans in the Senate backed, and you said no. You didn't want to do it. Or, look, It sounds inflammatory to say you support Putin, but here are five examples of you supporting Putin. Stop it. If you want us to believe you don't support Putin, support Ukraine. You know, but it's got to be that simple and direct, and it's got to last from now until November.
I couldn't agree more. It's repetition. It's simplicity, not simpleness, but simplicity. Trump understands one thing, and that is marketing. He has always marketed crappy products and been successful at it by and large. By the way, do you have your countdown clock to when he actually has to pay the bond for E. Jean Carroll?
I think it's March 11th, right? It's just a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Saudis to come over with like bags of, you know, dollar bills to give him so he can make his payment.
Yeah, well, Elon could help him now because Elon has met with him and he's in tune with Elon because in the past 24 hours, Elon's big complaint is angry ex-wives of the super rich. Elon's been going out, which is, I'm 100% sure, something Trump believes in as well, that this is a scourge. These are the things we have to stand up to. Well, Jen, I am so delighted that you joined us. It has been entertaining. It has lifted up my day despite the lack of water in Northwest Washington. And I will watch the State of the Union and the Oscars with greater enthusiasm, thanks to having spoken to you.
This has been a ton of fun. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Jen. And bye-bye to everybody who's been listening.